afternoon. This is Bob Kruger with Thought for Food for June of 2023. This program is heard on the third Wednesday of the month at 4 p.m. and repeated on the third Saturday of the month at 3 p.m. It's intended for a blind and print-impaired audience, but hopefully it'll be of interest to everyone. Days to observe in June begin with the 79th anniversary of D-Day, when Allied forces landed in Europe in 1944 during World War II on the 6th. Very few who took part in this operation are still alive. The 14th is Flag Day. It's also the birthday of the United States Army, established in 1775. The 18th is Father's Day, followed by Juneteenth, National Independence Day, on the 19th. Summer officially begins on the 21st. The Pledge of Allegiance was recognized by Congress in 1942, and on the 27th, we recognize National Post-Traumatic Stress Awareness Day. The United States Department of Agriculture has proposed new rules aimed at minimizing salmonella outbreaks from some breaded chicken products, a move that Andrew said could significantly affect availability and price. Part of a broader effort, a new proposal takes aim at breaded, stuffed, raw chicken products such as frozen chicken cordon bleu. Because these products are often pre-browned, consumers might mistakenly think they're cooked, leading to consumption of undercooked chicken, according to the USDA. Chicken producers are already required to test samples for salmonella, and they face more USDA scrutiny if contamination reaches a certain threshold. But some consumer groups say contaminated chicken still sometimes ends up on the shelves. Under this new proposal, any breaded raw chicken product from a batch that tested positive for even a small amount of bacteria wouldn't be able to be sold. Companies could choose to cook the chicken, which kills the bacteria for use in another project. The rule represents a big change in how the USDA inspects poultry, said Thomas Grimillion, director of food policy at the Consumers Federation of America, which praised the move. The National Chicken Council and trade groups said it estimates that annually more than 200 million servings of breaded, stuffed, raw chicken products would be lost, while production costs would rise, potentially closing smaller producers and increasing consumer prices. Currently, poultry companies are required to test chicken for samples of salmonella, with no more than 15.4% of chicken parts samples allowed to test positive, or the plant risks coming under intense scrutiny. Consumer groups say the system hasn't always been able to prevent companies exceeding these levels from selling their meat. A Consumer Reports investigation from last June found that almost one-third of the tested ground chicken packages contained salmonella. Under the new proposal, companies would have to recall or not sell any breaded stuffed chicken that tested positive for salmonella above the level of one colony forming unit per gram. Salmonella would also be formally considered an adulterant in raw chicken, a key step in creating enforceable regulations. Speaking about chicken comes an announcement from the Food and Drug Administration that it considers cultivated chicken made by Good Meat Incorporated safe to eat, making it the second company in the growing industry to have cleared a key regulatory hurdle. We have talked before about making meat, mostly chicken, from chicken cell material. Good Meat, based in Alameda, California, is the cultured meat arm of Eat Just Incorporated. It is now the only company selling its chicken to consumers, but that's just in Singapore, the only country to so far permit the sale to consumers of meat grown from cells outside of an animal. We have no questions at this time regarding Good Meat's conclusion that food comprised of or containing cultured chicken cell materials are safe as comparable foods produced by other methods, the Food and Drug Administration said in a letter to the company in mid-May. The FDA issued its first no-questions letter to another California company, Upside Foods, indicating that it considered its chicken fillet safe to eat. Both upside and good meat will have to receive clearance from the USDA before selling their cultivated meat products to consumers in the United States. If approved, good meat plans to work with celebrity chef and anti-hunger advocate Jose Andres to start serving its cultured chicken at one of its restaurants in Washington, D.C. The company said, since Singapore approved good meat for sale, we know this moment was next. I'm so proud to bring this new way of making meat to my country and to do it with a hero of mine, Chef Jose Andres, said Josh Tetrick, the co-founder and chief executive of Good Meat and Eat Just, said in a news release. It'll be interesting to see how quickly the USDA moves toward approving this new meat source. If I saw it in the store, I'd try it. Soft butter is easier to spread, but it's safe to keep out. This is the headline of an article in the Wall Street Journal. It begins, butter evangelist Joel Mertzel is spreading the word. The 49-year-old small business owner, author, and mother of three is on a mission to convince American households and federal officials that's safe and preferable to keep butter at room temperature instead of refrigerated, particularly for those who like it on their toast. Her quixotic crusade would liberate butter from a lifetime in the cold, moving from refrigerated trucks to chilled dairy cases of grocery stores to a built-in refrigerator shelf. Enough is enough, said Mrs. Mertzel, who lives in the Northridge neighborhood of Los Angeles. I want to eliminate confusion about putting butter on the counter. She said she came to this conclusion one morning about 14 years ago. She had forgotten to put the butter away the night before and at breakfast discovered how easy it was to spread. My life changed in so many ways at that moment, she said. She has written since a child's book, Change Your Life for the Butter, and developed a line of countertop holders with lids that keep clear of the softened butter inside. Traditional butter dishes are a train wreck, she said. The lids get all gross. Food safety scientists say butter usually doesn't stay constantly cold. Butter made from pasteurized cream is safe to store at room temperature for a time because of its high fat content and low moisture, among other reasons. Salted butter tends to stay fresh longer. Yet getting a definitive answer from the government's butter bureaucracy has been a slippery endeavor. Mrs. Mertzel this year petitioned the Food and Drug Administration to issue official guidance that butter could be safely kept out of the refrigerator at room temperature for 3 weeks. The FDA, which oversees butter safety, has largely stood firm. The agency's guidance for restaurants and the food industry advises keeping butter out of the refrigerator for no more than 4 to 6 hours. Yet a 2001 Food Administration study noted on page 38 that traditional butter and margarine have had a long history of safety without temperature control. The Agriculture Department, which sets butter grading standards such as A or AA, recommends leaving butter out for at the most a day or two. While butter will likely no longer keep longer, a USDA spokeswoman said the agency's recommendation seeks to ensure butter remains at optimal quality. In 2015, Mrs. Mertzel sent samples of four brands of butter to a lab for testing. The result, no sign of spoilage after 3 weeks of storage at 68 to 77 degrees Fahrenheit. She commissioned a similar analysis this year and found no spoilage after 30 days. This is a quality issue, not a safety issue, says Gina Modi, a butter researcher at the University of Wisconsin Center for Dairy Research. Butter will eventually go rancid, but that won't make people sick, she said. Ms. Modi is in an informal survey of her colleagues found that 24 of the 31 keep butter out, a telling data point among experts. Claire Dinhut, who goes by the name of Condiment Claire on TikTok, prefers to eat salted butter cold for its thicker texture. She talked about the Danish word tandsmør, which translates to a layer of butter so thick that a bite leaves teeth marks. I love the feeling of biting into butter and not having to melt it into the toast, she said. Ice hard butter makes Steve Tuttle heated. I just get too worked up when it comes impossible to spread on toast or pancakes, said Mr. Tuttle, a corporate private investigator based in Washington, D.C. His girlfriend, Pamela Hess, eventually warmed to the idea. He feels very strongly that it should be on the counter and at room temperature, she said. Miss Hess is the executive director of a nonprofit that teaches veterans how to farm. Christopher Kimball, who oversees the famous Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Cooking Empire, champions room temperature butter. Nothing worse than taking cold butter and trying to put it on a pancake, a waffle, or toast, he said. Sarah Moulton, who answers culinary questions from listeners on Milk Street's podcast, with Mr. Kimball, sides with the cold camp. If left unrefrigerated, she said, butter isn't going to kill you. It's just not going to taste good. And who would want to do that to yourself? I suspect that each of us have our own ideas about how we spread our butter. What to do with our discards is a question of many people and corporations are trying to deal with. In search of a solution has led the Coca-Cola company to try a new technology that turns hard to recycle plastic into new bottles, part of the effort to meet its sustainability goals. The company's biggest European bottler, Coca-Cola Euro-Pacific Partners, is funding a startup in the Netherlands that will produce food-grade recycled plastic from plastics that usually go into landfills or are incinerated, such as plastic film, trays, and colored packaging. The new technology is critical to improve access to recycled materials for bottles, said Walter Vanulen, Coca-Cola's Senior Director of Sustainability and Public Policy in Europe. They're aiming to boost the proportion of recycled materials that make up its packaging to 50% by 2030. The soft drinks group has achieved around 25% so far. The company needs its bottlers to use more recycled materials to meet its own sustainability goals. We simply do not have the necessary levels of recycled plastic, said Joe Francis, Vice President of Sustainability at Coca-Cola Euro-Pacific Partners. The new process from startup CURE technology cleans and partially breaks down plastics for reassembly into plastic materials, so it's called partial depolymerization method. Removes color from the polyester, turning it into clear polyethylene pellets. Coke has invested in CURE in 2020 and again this year. We wonder what other drink companies are doing along these lines. In March, we learned of the death of Leroy Raphael, a co-founder of the Arby's restaurant chain, who teamed up with his older brother, Forrest Raphael, in 1964 to take on McDonald's and other hamburger chains with a much pricier roast beef sandwich, died at age of 96. The Raphael brothers ran a restaurant supply company in Youngstown, Ohio, in the early 1960s, and they saw many of their customers, independent local eateries, were imperiled by the rise of national chains, some of who were offering hamburgers for around 15 cents, the current equivalent of about $1.45. They gambled that people would pay 69 cents for a fancier roast beef sandwich. Their company name was a play on the initials RB, which comes from either Roast Beef or Raphael Brothers. From their first location in Broadmoor, Ohio, the chain began spreading across the country, but stumbled in the early 1970s and went through a reorganization under bankruptcy laws. Leroy Raphael later quipped that the business survived because he was one tough son of a bitch. Royal Crown Cola Company bought the controlling interest in Arby's in 1976. 2 years later, Leroy Raphael retired to Miami, Florida. Arby's is now owned by Inspire Brands. He was born in 1927 and grew up in New Castle, Pennsylvania, near Pittsburgh. This salute to a food pioneer tells an unknown story that we thought you might find interesting. Who among us isn't ready to bake and pull out the brown sugar and found it and turn it into a solid brick? We're used to many pantry staples lasting months with little or no loss of quality. This isn't true with brown sugar unless you store it right. The reason is that brown sugar is hardly mundane. It contains molasses, which gives it its color and damp texture. When exposed to air, the moisture evaporates. Staving off the process is as simple as making sure that the sugar is stored airtight. The fastest way to turn your brown sugar into a brick is to leave it in that cardboard box it often comes in. Even if you think you sealed the plastic it comes in, trust us, you haven't. Instead, transfer the brown sugar to another airtight container. In my home, we found that placing the brown sugar in a plastic Ziploc bag with a slice of bread that absorbs the moisture and keeps the brown sugar in a usable state. Like many consumers, we may be looking for healthier food options, are willing to try something new or a new idea with a familiar food. If you are diagnosed with celiac disease, or you may be looking for gluten-free alternatives, or maybe you're on the hunt for lower carbohydrate choices, cauliflower may be just what you've been searching for. This versatile vegetable can be eaten raw, cooked, roasted, grilled, baked into a pizza crust, or cooked and mashed as a substitute for white potatoes. You can even rice cauliflower and serve it in the place of white rice. Cauliflower is a member of the cruciferous vegetable family, along with Brussels sprouts, cabbage, broccoli, collard greens, kale, kohlrabi, rutabagas, turnips, and bok choy. These vegetables all contain a compound that produces a strong, distinct odor that some find unappealing. But this family of vegetables also offers a wide range of health benefits and may reduce the risks of certain types of cancer. When it comes to nutrition, cauliflower is the superstar. It's high in vitamins C and K, and also a good source of folate, which supports cell growth and is essential during pregnancy. Cauliflower is fat-free and cholesterol-free. It's low in sodium. A one-cup serving contains 25 calories, 5 grams of carbohydrates, and 2 grams of dietary fiber. When shopping for cauliflower, look for a head that has tight, creamy white curds and bright green, firmly attached leaves. Avoid those with brown spots or loose, spread-out sections. Buy a head of cauliflower and separate it into sections or florets. Wrapped in a cellophane bag can trap moisture and speed up spoiling. Unwrap and transfer to a loosely sealed bag with a paper towel to help absorb the moisture. Whole heads of cauliflower can be stored in the refrigerator for 4 to 7 days. To bring more color to side dishes, salads, or snacks, try green, purple, or orange cauliflower. As you look for new ways to put vegetables on your plate, give cauliflower a try. Toss florets into a food processor to make a pizza crust or mince small pieces for your next stir fry. And be sure to involve the kids so they learn to try this familiar vegetable in new ways. When was the last time you bought a head of cauliflower? And here's an article that's above my understanding. It begins, Wendy's company will begin using an artificial intelligent powered chat box that will talk to customers and take drive-through orders, becoming the latest fast food chain to employ this technology. The system, powered by Google Cloud's artificial intelligence software, will be as natural as talking to an employee and has the ability to understand speech and answer frequently asked questions, the company said. Wendy's is one of several restaurants incorporating artificial intelligence and automation to improve customer service while grappling with labor shortages. What's more, drive-thrus have surged in popularity during the pandemic, with the chain saying 80% of its customers prefer to order this way. This creates a huge opportunity for us to deliver a truly different and frictionless experience for our customers, said CEO Todd Penegor said in the statement. Interest in artificial intelligent chat box from investors and the public has surged after the release of OpenAI's chat GPT last year. That touched off a race among tech giants, including Google's parent Alphabet, to push the new chat box technology into the business world. Opinions on what A1 will mean for workers and companies varies greatly from massive disruption to marginal change. In the view of Presto Automation, which offers an artificial intelligent ordering platform for restaurants, the technology will shake up the industry. I don't think in 3 years you're going to be a drive-thru with a human being taking your orders, said Krishna Gupia, Presto's chairman and interim chief executive officer. We'll wait and see what takes place. The story goes on that one of Raleigh's longest-serving restaurants may be responsible for bringing brunch to the city. I do know that, according to Arthur, Irregardless is the first place in Raleigh to go to brunch, said former co-owner Lee Robinson of former Irregardless co-founder Arthur Gordon. And when you're the first place to do it, 30 years later, if you're not doing it well, something's wrong. Voters in the News and Observer's Triangle brunch bracket have declared Raleigh's dining icon, Irregardless Cafe, as the best local brunch service. This pioneering cafe bested 21 other popular brunch spots and collected 63% of the votes to win the crown. Irregardless opened in 1975 by Mr. Gordon and co-founder Andy Arnold in the longtime spot at 901 West Morgan Street near downtown Raleigh. Launched as the city's first vegetarian restaurant, they helped establish a new standard in the Triangle for seasonal plant-based eating. And since nearly the beginning, Irregardless has been big on brunch, serving at times a two-page menu of favorite dishes and basic classic cocktails. At the beginning of 2020, Mr. Golden sold the restaurant to Trophy Brewing co-owner David Meeker and Raleigh restaurant veteran Lee Robinson, who operates the cafe. Brunch continues to be the restaurant's most popular meal. Brunch is breakfast food and a cocktail, Mr. Robinson said. It's the best thing in the world. Irregardless does as much brunch business as it possibly can do every single Sunday, he said. Roughly 500 meals from morning to the afternoon. As longtime musicians Larry Hutchison and Gene O'Neill alternate weekends filling the dining room with music. Though through the last couple of years of the pandemic, Mr. Robbins said brunch may have been the meal that kept Irregardless afloat. When Robinson and Meeker took over Irregardless, stepping into one of the city's storied dining rooms, brunch was the one meal that got tweaked. They cut the menu in half and moved the solid cocktail list up front so diners could consider the vegan Bloody Mary at the outset. Favorites included a gluten-free waffle that Mr. Robbins says doesn't taste gluten-free and a house-cured smoked salmon Benedict. Brunch is partially defined by the company, they say, marked by friends venturing out and coming together over a meal. It's an eating experience that exists best in a dining room. Brunch is really about coming here for the people. It's a place for people to hang out, Mr. Robinson said. It's much more communal experience and who you're with. 30 years and still going. Someone has done something right for sure. It's with sadness we inform you of the death of Chef Walter Royal, the longtime chef at the Angus Barn, who honed his skills alongside acclaimed Southern chefs and became a local celebrity on his own. In a program several years ago, we told the story of this renowned chef. If any of you remember that program, you'll have to listen again, while those who have not heard this story learn Walter Royal's journey. His death was announced by the Angus Barn. He led the kitchen of the famous steakhouse for 26 years, one of just three chefs in the restaurant's history, and the only one to wear the title of executive chef. It is with the heaviest of hearts we sadly mourn the loss of Chef Walter Royal, Angus Barn wrote in a statement. His spirit, kindness, and desire to mentor others was legendary. He set the example for a life well lived, even in the face of adversity. His legacy will live forever, and he'll be missed by so very many. May he rest in peace. Born in Alabama, Mr. Royal was the grandson of farmers, and before cooking had been a football star who earned bachelor's and master's degrees in psychology. But after a brief career in social work, he couldn't shake a calling for the kitchen. In his 30s, he enrolled in a three-month cooking course in Atlanta, led by the famed Southern cookbook author Nathalie Dupree. The course wasn't necessarily for professional chefs, but Ms. Dupree said she saw greater things for Mr. Royal, an ambition and passion for the kitchen. I knew he'd do something with it because he was an older student, Ms. Dupree said. He wanted to change careers, and I knew he wanted to get better. He sought out a culinary school because he said he wanted the tools to showcase Southern food beyond the cliches. Growing up in Alabama, it was nothing but barbecue, fried chicken, and stuff like that, Mr. Royal said in an NNO interview. I needed to learn. I wanted to get my hands on other good food. Not to say that fried chicken and barbecue wasn't good, but there's more to Southern cuisine than that. One day in the early 1980s, Ms. Dupree said she got a call from Jenny Finch, owner of the Farrington House in Pittsburgh, which was then led by Southern culinary legend Edna Lewis. At the elegant rural resort, Ms. Lewis needed some more hands in the kitchen. Ms. Dupree knew she had the right student. Working alongside Ms. Lewis, Mr. Royal found the refinement he was looking for in Southern cuisine. To say, okay, this is something you love, have a passion for, something is in your soul, but have to let it come to the surface. So help me open those eyes and look around, he said. Not only seeing an apple as something that grew and was beautiful, but could be delicious, and you could share it and tweak it, and you could find 30 other ways to prepare it. Once Miss Lewis moved from Farrington, Mr. Royal stayed on and helped new chefs Ben and Karen Walker find their way at the historic restaurant where the Barkers won two James Beard Awards. On his own, Walter opened his first restaurant, Crescent Cafe, serving a casual Cajun menu in downtown Durham before the city was the dining destination it is today. Later, he was able to cook at the James Beard House in New York. The Angus Barn. We've run out of time for this episode of Thought for Food. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Bob Kruger, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. So long until next time. If you have any questions or comments, please call us at 919-832-5138. 919-832-5138.